Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact this show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT, community organization. Tonight's topic, Gaddafi. Was Gaddafi the dictator they say he was? Pause. I know I said I was going to repeat the show from last week, but I ran under this. It was so interesting, and I don't usually do political things, but this is so interesting. I had to thought I had to do this show because it was, well, you'll see. For instance, the Clinton administration officials said they would almost certainly reject an application from the Nation of Islam and its leader, Louis Farrakhan, to be allowed to accept a donation of more than $1 billion from Colonel Muammar al-Gaddafi of Libya, right? Farrakhan defended the gift and said he would mount a vigorous fight if the government barred it. From the New York Times, Colonel Gaddafi pledged $1 billion to the Nation of Islam after meeting with Minister Farrakhan in Libya. The United States, which has long labeled the Gaddafi government a supporter of terrorism, bars nearly all economic ties with Libya. So USA, he supports terrorist groups. So, you know, they won't even accept money, allow anybody that lives in the U.S. to support, to get any kind of support from Gaddafi. So I thought the United States would never have anything to do with terrorism, and surely they would be more capable and willing to match the pledge of a dictator, a small oil-producing country. After all, the Nation of Islam are American citizens. And who cares more about American citizens than the United States of America, right? The government, right? Apparently, Gaddafi did. Could it be that the U.S. government feared the empowerment of the Nation of Islam and their ability and willingness to empower African Americans in America? Did they fear an alliance between African Americans and Gaddafi? I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not even answering that, because you can probably answer that question yourself if you just think about it. So President Gaddafi was the president of Libya. Like several African leaders in the 1960s, Gaddafi took power in a coup from the monarchy of King Idris. In 2011, an anti-Gaddafi uprising emerged, resulting in a civil war. Eventually, the U.S. and rebels brought down the Gaddafi government. So that's the U.S. and rebels, right? So, Muammar Gaddafi, right from Wikipedia, which I thought was interesting. He founded, within a military group, he founded a revolutionary group which disposed of the Western-backed Senussi monarchy of Idris, right? It was a Western-backed government that he disposed of. So, that says it has other interests other than the people of Libya, right? It's backed by Western forces, right? Influences. In 1969, after he took over, he converted Libya into a republic governed by his revolutionary command council. Ruling by decree, he deported Libya's Italian population and ejected its Western military bases. Basically, he said Libya for the Libyans, right? So something had to be going on for him to do that, right? But that will get you on a lot of folks' hit lists, right? What he did right there. It was a Western-backed government. He got rid of them. And he got rid of the people who weren't Libyans, right? These Italians and military bases in his country. That's weird, right there. Why do they? Why are Western military bases in Libya? Why doesn't Libya have its own military base solely? Why, like, are there Eastern military bases in America? I'm just asking. It may sound like a stupid question because it is, but wouldn't that seem to be kind of like, well, why are they in Libya? Anyway, that's what you would think, right? But they got a lot going on over there. And, you know, Gaddafi was trying to work it, seems like. So that would get you on a lot of folks' hit list, right? Self-determination is a threat to those who seek to influence or have power over you to serve their benefit, right? I get it, but you have to be able to defend your interests, your resources, and your people against attack, both subliminal and covert, from within and abroad, right? That's what you have to do when you start self-determining, right? In the States, we had, I like to use an example, is the Black Wall Street situation. They did, they had everything covered, all the bases covered, except for self-defense. They had all the bases covered. They had self-determination, self-respect, but they didn't have self-defense covered, right? I mean, they had a little bit, but it wasn't, you know, more than enough. So it wasn't covered because they couldn't preserve the lives of the people in a community and the town itself, right? So how did Gaddafi defend his government? A thing called the History of Liberia under Muammar Gaddafi. Again, I took this from Wikipedia. It's a little short thing. It said, all his actions led to a deterioration of Libya's foreign relations with several countries, mostly Western states. As you can see, if you've been awoke, you know that right there gets you in trouble, right? In 1986, U.S. bombing of Libya, as I just said, see? And Gaddafi defends his government's action by citing the need to support anti-imperialist and anti-colonial movements around the world, basically saying, get these foreigners out of your country, get these foreigners out of position where they have great influence on decisions made in your country, self-determine what you and your country is going to do. That's basically what that's saying. Get them out. That's why he got people out, and so that he can get his people together. You know, it's hard to work if you got a lot of people running interference, right? They have other interests and things like that, right? So from AYUPP.com, Muammar Gaddafi became the de facto leader of Libya on September 1st, 1969, after leading a group of young Libyan military officers against King Idris I in a bloodless coup. I'm trying to figure out how he do that. How you even have a bloodless coup? What kind of coup is that? Bloodless. Not drop. Nobody got punched in the nose or nothing like that. Like, man, that's, I thought that was amazing right there. I did not think he did that, because when I thought he had a coup. They had to, you know, ice some people to get what they wanted, get them out of there. They ain't have to do nothing. No toe tags or nothing. No graves dug or nothing like that. Just a bloodless coup. Y'all got to go. So, if you're going to have a coup, I think that's an excellent way to have one. You know, if you can. Right? So say, after the king fled the country, the Libyan Revolutionary Command, right, Council, the RCC, headed by Gaddafi, abolished the monarchy, right? Of course, they got rid of the king, right? and the old constitution and established the Libyan Arab Republic with the motto, freedom, socialism, and unity. Under Gaddafi, per capita income in the country rose to more than U.S. 11,000, the fifth highest in Africa. So under Gaddafi, the income rose more than $11,000, right? The fifth highest income in Africa. Following are the facts they came to know from global research about Gaddafi. They said, today's Libya as a nation state has been destroyed by U.S. and NATO, right? I know there's U.S. and NATO back in Ukraine right now, right? What do you think of when you hear the name of Colonel Gaddafi? Tyrant, dictator, terrorist? They say, well, a national citizen of Libya may disagree. For 41 years until his demise on October 11th, Gaddafi, they say he did some truly amazing things in his country and repeatedly tried to unite and empower the whole of Africa. That's another thing that would get you on somebody's hit list. You know, if I'm raping a place and you're trying to unite them, which means you self-determination again, you see what you didn't kick out folks from your country that's not, you know, from your country. You didn't separate ties to some point to this thing that you holding all the cards when it comes to how that money is flowing, right, in and out of your country. Now he's going to influence the rest of Africa to do that. That's a hell of a prophylactic for Africa, right? If they all decide to join in with that concept, accept that concept, right? So they say he did some powerful things that are not characteristic of a vicious dictator, as portrayed by the Western media. This makes you wonder. Is he a vicious dictator because he's a vicious guy, or he had to respond? You know, somebody shoot at you, you shoot back. They may shoot two times at you. You may give them half a clip. Does that make you more vicious than the guy that shot twice at you, or what? You know, I don't know. I'm just using that as an example. So anyway, global research came up with 10 things about Gaddafi, right? And I thought they were all examples of what should be happening right here in the United States. But this is a capitalist country, so, you know, it's supposed to be a republic, but, you know, capitalism is wolves here. So, but I'm going to not going to go back on that should happen here. These things here would be nice. And if you think one of these things wouldn't be nice, just call in and let me know. You say, hell no, shouldn't do that. People don't deserve that. Wouldn't do that for these folks. Hell no. You can say what you want to say. Just don't cuss, you know, real bad. The first, number one, in Libya, a home is considered a natural human right. Just that right there. Not many votes a person could get running on that for office. You don't never hear it. What person ever ran for office ran on that? In his Gaddafi's Green Book, it states a house is a basic need of both the individual and the family, which we all know that this is not rocket science. Therefore, it should not be owned by others. Gaddafi's Green Book is the formal leader's political philosophy. It was first published in 1975 and was intended reading for all Libyans, even being included in the national curriculum, right? So you have a house to live in. As long as you live there, you got a house to live in. If you, you know, I guess you grow up, you need a house, bam, they give you a house, right? You don't have to worry about having a roof over there. That's a different concept because ownership of property where we at, that's how you gain wealth, right? Owning things, Then you get into how many houses do a person need, because you got people that own lots of property, you know. So he squashed that. You get a house. So you ain't got to worry about, oh, I'm scraping up money. I got to sell dope to get this property, or I got to, you know, rob. I don't get no money. I got to work 3 jobs. You know, it's none of that. So education and medical treatment were all free. Education, medical treatment were all free. Under Gaddafi, Libya boasts of one of the best health care services in the Middle East and Africa. Also, if a citizen could not access the medical treatment they needed or education, the education or the correct medical treatment in Libya, they were funded to go abroad. Where you got to go get this procedure or this education at? You got to go to America? Hey, they backed them financially. Meantime, my welfare now. Gaddafi carried out the world's largest irrigation project. So he made the largest irrigation system in the world, known as the Great Man-Made River, was designed to make water readily available to all Liberians across the entire country. He made water available to all Liberian citizens across the country. It was funded by the Gaddafi government, and it said that Gaddafi himself called it the eighth wonder of the world. That's nice. That's a nice dictator. I don't know. Should the word nice and dictator even be used in the same sentence? I don't even know. But this is bizarre because of the message we're getting about this man and some of the things he's doing. They said that he did. I don't know if he did it or not. I've never been to Libya. I don't have boots on the ground. I don't know anyone who had boots on the ground. They should know to get my information from research. So it was free to start a farming business. It was free to start a farming business. If any Libyan wanted to start a farm, they were given a house. They were given a house, farmland, and livestock, and seeds for all free of charge. Man, that's like 40 acres and a mule for everybody, for anybody that wanted, right? Folks over here still crying about not getting the 40 acres and the mule, right? Bursary was given to mothers with newborn babies. It's deep right here, see? When the Libyan woman gave birth, she was given $5,000 for the child. How much money they get here for giving birth to a child? I don't know. Electricity was free. All right? Free. The word free here, this is how the dictator. Electricity is free. Electricity was free in Libya, meaning absolutely, absolutely no electric bills. They had cheap petrol, which that makes sense. Any oil-producing country should have cheap petrol. Doesn't the U.S. produce oil? Anyway, during Gaddafi's reign, the price of petrol in Libya was as low as 0.14 U.S. dollars per liter. Gaddafi raised the level of education. Of course, he's paying for it, right? Go. He's encouraging people to go, because one of the deterrents for getting education is income, is finances and things like that, right? A lot of people don't want to get in that debt. A lot of people don't have the money to go and things like that. So, you know, that impacts on what kind of education you're going to get, where you're going to go get your education and things like that, right? Before Gaddafi, only 25% of Libyans were literate. It was brought up to 87%, with 25% earning university degrees. All right, number eight. Number nine, Libya had its own state bank. This is another thing. I know the United States has struggled with this, America. They had struggled with this whole thing about this banking system and Federal Reserve and things like that. They eventually got, I don't know if they got snaked into or bored into or whatever. Anyway, Libya had its own state bank, provided loans to citizens at 0% interest by law, and they had no external debt.
What?
That right there is like, it seems like, I mean, really, this thing reads like, no, he couldn't have done this. Just because leaders don't do stuff like that for people. Anyway, he had this thing called the gold dinar. Fall of Tripoli and his untimely demise, because Gaddafi was eventually killed, right, if you know. He was trying to introduce a single African currency backed by gold. As you know, in America, we have currency. They call it fiat money, right? It's, I've read where it's not backed by gold, right? It's, the money is not backed by gold, and but their money is backed by gold. So I have to do some research. Maybe I should do a research on that, a show on that, but I don't spend too much time on that because I've read it somewhere. You can just look and see if that's true, we have fiat money, fiat, like the car fiat. So, it's, you know, I never really understand the whole backed by gold thing anyway, even if it's backed or not backed by gold. But this is the system, and the system say that money got to be backed by gold to make it good, right? You can be good on your payments and who you are, what your money stand for, right? Gaddafi wants to introduce an only trade in the African gold dinar, right? A move which would have thrown the world economy into chaos now. Oof. The dinar was widely opposed by the elite of today's society, and who could blame them? African nations would have finally had the power to bring itself out of debt and poverty and only trade in this precious commodity between themselves. That's like the money flipping. You know how they say the money, and black people get money, it comes, they get it in their hands, and first time they spend it's outside of the community. Well, this money would flip. I don't know how many times it would flip, just all the African nations are working together. They would have been able to finally say no to external exploitation. They would have been able to finally say no to external exploitation and charge whatever they felt suitable for precious resources, right? So we got people externally have an interest in their country, their resources, right, who want to exploit of their resources, right? So that means they want to get as much, make as much money from their resources, buy cheap, sell high, right? And they profit, right? It has been said that the gold dinar was the real reason for the NATO-led rebellion. They said, this guy trying to break us. In a bid, oust the outspoken leader. They say, was Gaddafi a terrorist? Is that what terrorists do? Few people can answer this question fairly, but if anyone can, it's a Libyan citizen who has lived under his reign. So, if any of these 10 things are true, Gaddafi is one of the strangest tyrants I have ever read about. If he made these resources and profits available to all Libyans, he provided greater support for his people under tyranny, right, than the U.S. does. I can't really say that the U.S. is not doing things for people who are under tyranny, because we know the history of the African-American in the United States. They lived in tyranny for centuries in this country. But they didn't get these kind of supports. Systemic tyranny. That's like, you know. He utilized Libya's resources to benefit Libyans. That is something the U.S. could learn a lesson from. Being a government that is actually for the people. Just as Marcus Garvey was sabotaged, Gaddafi appeared to have been under attack by his countrymen and outside forces. If he is a madman, we need more madmen who act in the interest of his people and his country. You cannot expect Gaddafi to live by the Western laws, particularly if his life is constantly in danger. Hanging four men in public is no harder than and getting away with it. So, got to read to understand. That's the short version of that, of murdering people for profit. That's in reference to things being marketed to the public, which cause death. Read the things that you're purchasing, and you'll see what I'm talking about, right? It's not rocket science. It's right in front of you. It's in your mouth. It's, you're sitting in it. You're using it. It's all around you. Just read. When people do not come in peace, they have chosen your and their own fate, right? I think the civilians of Hiroshima and Nagasaki view the United States of America as demonic terrorists. But it was war, right? Some people might say, oh, it's war. Well, same thing in Libya. From HR.org. 20 years of U.S. torture and counting. Not the U.S. We don't do that. That's a Gaddafi thing, right? He supports terrorists. They say in U.S. 20 years of U.S. torture and counting. From global cause of unlawful detention and interrogation post 9/11, right? They say the first foreign Muslim men in prison by the U.S. military at the detention center at Guantanamo Bay. How you say that? Brolo, you listening? Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, in the so-called global war on terror. Since January 2002, the United States has held nearly 800 men and boys at Guantanamo Bay. Of the 39 currently remain, 27 have never been charged. The U.S. government's reliance on deeply flawed military commissions, along with other due process failures, has not only violated the rights of men held at Guantanamo, but survivors of the September 11 attacks and families of the dead of the right to justice. All right, we have caller 036. Hello?
Yeah, I just want to say you're correct. Guantanamo.
Oh, Guantanamo. Yeah, that's right. So that's it?
Yeah, you kind of asked that question right. A couple of seconds.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm just going to hold you on. So you can just speak when you want. Just keep it quiet because I don't want to lose you. All right?
All right.
So the U.S. has held no one accountable for the CIA orchestrating a system of underscored black sites throughout the world in which it secretly detained at least 119 Muslim men and tortured at least 39. The U.S. has largely resisted accountability for abuses at its military prisons in Afghanistan and Iraq, where it detained thousands of Muslims, including several women and boys, and at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The U.S. military is still detaining 39 Muslims at Guantanamo. As I said, 27 of them without criminal charges. Judicial procedures are so flawed that none of the five 9/11 suspects have been brought to trial, they said. I didn't know that. 784 Muslim men and boys whom the U.S. has held at Guantanamo Bay since January 11, 2002. I think this thing was written. When was this thing written? It's like this was written in 22. Well, 22 or 20. So the prisoners, the U.S. has spent $8 trillion on the war on terror, including $540 million a year just to detain prisoners at Guantanamo. Sound familiar? The war on terror, war on drugs, you know. Anyway, while unlawful, U.S. detentions have gradually ebbed, right? So that's good right there. Good thumbs up for you, U.S. Guys. You're trying to do something right, but it's taking a long time. Civilian deaths and injuries from U.S.-led strikes in the war on terror skyrocketed under President Barack Obama and Donald J. Trump without accountability. So they were over there blowing up people. I know y'all like Barack. That's what the article is saying. The extraordinary additions, unlawful transfer from one country to another, secret detention and torture have damaged the international human rights system. Taylor and her co-author, Elsa Epstein, said, by committing these abuses with impunity, the U.S. has made it easier for countries such as Russia, Egypt, and China to criticize Washington and deflect international condemnation of their own human rights violations. They like, man, what are you talking about? Us? Look what you're doing. What are you talking about? Look in the mirror. Take the, what's that thing in the Bible say? Take the log out of your eye before you start talking about somebody else. U.S. counterterrorism partners have replaced the Guantanamo model by detaining thousands of people in dire conditions in Iraq, northern Syria, Nigeria, Egypt, and elsewhere for alleged terrorism offenses. Those detained, often without charge or trial, include civil society members, suspects, relatives, and children who are victims of armed groups. The report lays out the comprehensive assessment of many unconscionable costs of U.S. torture and illegal detentions and renditions of Muslims over the past 20 years since 9/11. So they've been running amok on the Muslim community since 9/11. This is a moral failure of epic proportion, they say, a stain on the nation's human rights record. That's another stain on the nation's human rights record, because we got plenty of stains. The U.S. need to change their underwear pretty often. Anyway. Called it a strategic blunder and an abhorrent perpetuation of Islamophobia and racism. So they're just going off on these folks. This report is the latest resource from the Cost of War Project, housed by Brown University's Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs. So it seems like who is a terrorist and who is not a terrorist is subjective. It's not like this is what a terrorist does, and if you do this, you're a terrorist. It's like, if I do this, I'm not a terrorist. But if you do this, you are a terrorist. It sounds like that type of thing. So, AYUPP.com. How bad was Gaddafi? They talked about, they referred to the 10 things about Gaddafi they don't want you to know. And how, you know, this the Libyan nation state has been destroyed by U.S. and NATO, right? So, you know, NATO's the European countries over there, right? Basically, they look like they all surround Russia. The BBC on what he also did. They said, and BBC said, Liberia was made great. Had made great strides socially and economically thanks to its vast oil income. But the tribes and clans continue to be part of the demographic landscape. Women in Libya were free to work and dress as they like, subject to family constraints. Family, not Gaddafi constraints, right? Life expectancy is in the 70s. See, that's good right there. as per capita income, as we were talking about, while not as high as it could be expected, given Libya's oil wealth and relatively small population of 6.5 million, is estimated at 12,000 to 9,000, I guess, according to the World Bank. This is one of those cases where the Western view is slightly at odds with the African view. And it says, and I write this aware of the dangers of making sweeping generalizations, he said. It's hard to believe now, but Libya in the 1950s and the early 60s was pro-Western, and the Western media absolutely loved it. So I guess it was pro-Western, and that means it. Apparently, pro-Western means you're not looking after your people. So that's like feeding somebody else's kids, some man family across town, you know, somebody in Jersey if you live in Philly, somebody in New Jersey if you live in New York, you feed somebody else's family. Your kids wearing shoes for 2 years, same shoes. Wow, they got on the brand new, the latest gear. That's a hell of a tyrant, though. How can a tyrant provide better resources for his people than the leaders of the so-called free world? Somebody help me out with that, because I am not the sharpest knife in the kitchen. How can a tyrant, right, a dictator, a man who supports people who are basically saying are wrong, these terrorists, right? Those guys are wrong. They have no platform, no legitimate reason to do some of the things they do. I agree, some of the stuff they're doing is just discriminate bombing is stupid to make. You can't force people into going against their own country. You make them come after you, which you can see as a result of 9/11. Not saying who blew up what, but under the concept or idea that it was these Osama bin Laden, and they're held up in Afghanistan or wherever they held up at, you're only going to make Americans come after you. So you should always know your enemy before you start attacking things, you know, blowing up subway cars and all that. It doesn't matter that you just, you know, separate any hope you have of reaching out to the American people. And good thing that nobody wants to be warmongers all the time, because I don't know where we would be. Anyway, so how can a tyrant provide better resources for his people than the leaders of the so-called free world? It's wealthier nations. Is it not? It's not consistent with the capitalist ideology and New World Order agenda. Gaddafi was way out of line consorting with and conspiring with the opposition of the West and NATO countries. However, the penalty was death, a regime change, one supported, once again, by the West and NATO. Y'all see a pattern here or not? You know, help me out with this. As I said, I'm not the sharpest knife in the kitchen. Damn. What could be worth fighting a war about? From Wikipedia, they broke down a little thing to me. They said, Wikipedia's all right. I just think they went on telling the same story everybody else telling. They must get the information from a bunch of resources and put it in there, because they talked about petroleum politics, right? And the economic base for Libya's revolution has been its oil reserves, right? And that's why you kick people out, cut several Western ties, kick them folks out, get your military base. This is a military base. Take all your stuff off our land. Bam, get out of here. However, Libya's petroleum reserves were small compared to those of other major Arab petroleum-producing states. Libya was more ready to ration output in order to conserve its natural wealth and less responsive to moderating its price raise demands than the other countries, right? They said, no, I ain't giving in to y'all on this price thing, right? Petroleum was seen both as a means of financing the economic and social development of a woefully underdeveloped country and as a political weapon to brandish in the Arab struggle against Israel. See, they got problems over there, right? The increase in production that followed the 1969 revolution was accompanied by Libyan demands for higher petroleum prices, a greater share of revenues, and more control over the development of the country's petroleum industry. Now, this Libyan oil, all of that should have already been in place, right? Foreign petroleum companies agreed to a price hike of more than three times the going rate from U.S. 0.90 to U.S. 3.45 per barrel early in 1971. In December, the Libyan government suddenly nationalized the holdings of British Petroleum in Libya and withdrew funds amounting to approximately $550 million invested in British-owned banks as a result of a foreign policy dispute. So they took their toys away. What? British Petroleum rejected as inadequate a Libyan offer of compensation, and the British Treasury banned Libya from participating in the sterling arena. So they throwing stones now, right? In 1973, the Libyan government announced the nationalization of a controlling interest in all other petroleum companies operating in the country. The nationalization of a controlling interest. See that? Self-determination, right? This step gave Libya control of about 60% of its domestic oil production by early 1974, a figure that subsequently rose to 70%. So Gaddafi was on something. Total nationalization was out of the question, given the need for foreign expertise and funds in oil exploration, production, and distribution. So they built they needed foreign help, so they 30%, right, would go away. If they would have stuck around, they wouldn't have need no foreign help, because they would have. Anyway, he took control of the oil resources in his country and used the profits to enhance the quality of life of Libyans. Britain was upset. That's strike one. The 1973 oil crisis, insisting on the continued use of petroleum as leverage against Israel and its supporters in the West, Libya strongly urged the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Libya strongly urged the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, to take action in 1973, and Libyan military was particularly responsible for OPEC measures to raise oil prices, impose embargoes, and gain control of production. Spread, right? Libya's poison is spreading, cutting into my money. So you can look at that like, even though he's doing the right thing for himself, it's taking money away from Western interests, right? So, but all Westerners are going to do is just make the general public pay. Phone ringing. Anybody want to call? I want you to remember to call on the guest line, 516-531-9540. Remember, call on the guest line if you want to call in. 516-531-9540. Press number one if you want to speak, and then I'll get you. Keep looking at the board, because I'm doing dashboard also. Thanks for hanging in there, bro. Okay, so Libya was the first Arab nation to issue an oil embargo against the United States after U.S. President Richard Nixon announced the U.S. would provide Israel with a $2.2 billion military aid program during the Yom Kippur War. Saudi Arabia and other Arab oil-producing nations in OPEC would follow suit the next day. Sorry, so then we got a what they call a conflict of interest here, right? After while the other Arab nations lifted their oil embargoes on March 1874, Gaddafi regime refused to do so. I ain't doing nothing, right? So you helping my enemy out, right? Yeah, this is the theme that's going on with this thing. Consequence of such policy, Libya's oil production declined by half between 1970 and 1974, while revenues from oil exports more than quadrupled. Production and hence income declined yet again in the early 80s because of the high price of Libyan crude and because recession in the industrialized world reduced demand for oil from all sources, right? They had a recession, so they bought less oil, right? Probably just hiked the price up over here, bought less, right? Libya's five-year economic social transformation plan, 1976 to 80, announced that in 1975 was programmed to pump $20 billion into the development of a broad range of economic activities that would continue to provide income after Libya's petroleum reserves had been exhausted. So he's making plans. He's making a list, checking it twice, you know, want to make sure that Libya comes out nice, right? So he's a dude smart. Agriculture was slated to receive the largest share of aid in an effort to make Libya self-sufficient in food and to help keep the rural population on the land, right? Industry, which there was little before the revolution, also received a significant amount of funding in the first development plan. Well, it's the second, launched in 1981. So this is a hell of a dictator. Gaddafi took money out of the world's oligarchs' pockets by uniting the OPEC nations in an oil embargo against the oil conglomerates in the United States and the other oil-consuming nations. That is the second strike upsetting the big sharks. Like I said, you even if you're right, you got to be able to defend. You know, I get paid, and unless I can defend that money I got in my pocket, somebody gonna come take it that want it, right? So, same thing with the country, and you can tell what's going on here. These guys don't play fair at all. That's the second big strike, though. He upsetting the big sharks. Everything he's doing is upsetting the big dogs, right? The big sharks, right? Then he went and had what they call an alignment with the Soviet bloc. After September coup, U.S. forces proceeded deliberately with the planned withdrawal from Willis Air Base. So U.S. troops have an air base in Libya, under the agreement made with the previous government, right? The West-supported government that he kicked out of there, right? The foreign minister, Salah Bousir, played an important role in negotiating the British and American military withdrawal from the new republic. The last of the American contingent turned the facility to the Libyans on June 11th, 1970. That became a national holiday in Libya. Rid of the outsiders, right? On March 27th, the British air base El Adeim and the naval base and Tubrunk were abandoned. Look at this. They all over there. Somebody help me out. Anybody, military guys? Are there any Arab military bases or military anything in the United States? What's going on here? Because people just setting up camp, military bases, and all kinds of stuff in people's country. What's going on with that? Why we don't have that whole idea, Americans for the Americans? Why we don't have that thing? What's up with that? Spread yourself too thin, you know what happens, right? Eventually you pop. As relations with the U.S. steadily deteriorated, Gaddafi forged close links with who? The Soviet Union, the other big dog, right? Hey, I'm going to the other big shark. And other Eastern Bloc countries. So they're going to go, as, okay, what I can't get from you, right? One door closed, another door open. All right, so Gaddafi said, hey, what y'all got for me? Libya stands as a non-aligned country, right? And opposing the spread of communism in the Arab world, right? They maintain that. We are non-aligned. We ain't with neither one of them. We ain't with you. You know, we opposed to the spread of communism in the world, right? Or basically the Soviet Union, right? So they want to do the same thing U.S. doing, set up like they did in Afghanistan, right? So Libya's army sharply increased from the 6,000-man pre-revolutionary force that had been trained and equipped by the British, right? So under the prince or whatever, he had 6,000 trained by the British. Now the army was armed with Soviet-built armor and missiles. Now this is rubbing it, adding salt to injury, consorting with the enemy, strike three. Big dog, big shark, strike three, right? Not only are you, you know, kicking us out the country, taking over more than the lion's share of the profits and the decision making, you self-determining, you influencing other folks to do the same, causing us more money. Got that dinar, you trying to break the bank, make us look bad with that gold back money. I don't know how much gold U.S. had back in their money back then, but I don't even know. I don't know when the fiat thing started. I used to know that, but I don't know. I used to know what they say about that anyway. Because I don't have boots on the ground. I don't know much. I'm just sharing information. Let's just call that strike three. Libya appeared to be consorting with the enemy by getting military arms from the Soviet Union and having a close relationship with Eastern Bloc countries. How dare you? Isn't that the same Soviet Union, the U.S., and European nations Britain fought with in World War II? World War I, too. I smell U.S. and British imperialism and capitalism at work until Gaddafi took control of Libya. The military power and influence diminished, as evidenced by the surrendering of the Air Force bases and naval bases and bases in Libya, while Libya maintained close ties with the Soviet Union and company. The U.S. is currently supporting the Ukraine in their war against Russia, alias Soviet Union. They also supported Afghanistan in their war against Russia, alias the Soviet Union. From greenleaf.org, AU. U.S. policymakers for decades, they said, right? 1979 and 1989, they backed the Afghan war against the Soviet Union. The New World Order had its start Oh, that contributed to the collapse of the Soviet Union. They're saying this Afghan war thing. That's a hell of, that really? Anyway, the New World Order had its start, one might say, in this desolate country, although it reached its heyday a short time later in the Gulf War. Okay. So from 1979 to 1989, the U.S. was extremely busy in Afghanistan, then ruled by forces of the Soviet Union. America saw the Soviet presence as a threat to its influence in Central Asia and especially as a threat to its allies, Pakistan and Turkey. The Iranian Revolution had already topped over through the Shah, right? Shah was already, they took him over. Okay, we got a caller here on 8282. Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought.
How you doing? I appreciate the opportunity to participate. How you doing?
Oh, I'd love to have you on here. I'm fine, bro. How you doing?
Great. I was hesitant about calling in because I didn't hear the whole show, but I still want to offer a couple of insights, a little insight to the situation, you know, if I may.
Please do.
Could that be? A lot of people are, you know, there's an attempt by a lot of black people to almost deify Gaddafi, but that's not true. Gaddafi was a good leader, but he was not everything that everybody says. He was not Moses for black people. Gaddafi,
right.
But Gaddafi was into, he was not, he was into Arabism, Arab nationalism. And but Gaddafi did very well for his people. Libya was practically paradise compared to what's going on now. You know, you got money when you got married, you got money when you had a child, you got the standard of living in Libya had the highest standard of living in all of Africa based on what Gaddafi was utilizing, because Gaddafi took power and decided to use the resources of his country to benefit his people. And he also helped black people, African nations all across the country. And most of a whole lot of what we're dealing with now, today, problem-wise in Africa, is a result of Barack Obama and the American assault on Libya. America has been the devil in Libya that he's always been in Africa. They the so-called terrorism that they claim to be fighting in all of Northeast Africa and Burkina Faso, Nigeria, Niger, Mali, all that is a result of the United States destroying Libya. The United States, with its vassals of NATO, who are nothing else but the rest of the white nations, who are determined to run the world. They are determined to rule the world. And they are at war with anybody who wants to use their resources to benefit them instead of America. They think the whole world belongs to them, and everything they've done has been to weaken anybody who is a possible threat to America running the world. That's why, and they went crazy after the fall of the Soviet Union in 91. But they're about what they call a single. They want to be the single hegemon of the world. And they're determined that right now they're risking it all to beat Russia and have forced Russia and China into a partnership for survival. But, and what you see going on in Africa is a direct result of American atrocities. Gaddafi did everything in the world for his people. He was a great leader in regards to Arab initiatives, but he was also good to a lot of, you know, what blacks are going through in Libya now.
Right. They're slaves. That's right.
They actually sell black people in Libya now because of America.
Still do.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Still going on.
They sell people in Libya because of America. This is all due to American policy, and America used they made excellent use of a Negro president to attack and try to resubjugate Africa with forced homosexuality down their throat, and to remind them, Africa is not free. There's not a free country in Africa. They are fighting for it now, but America, how could Africa be free if Niger, that had the latest so-called coup, has the largest drone base in the world, is in Niger from America.
Hmm.
America, France, they are still trying to bleed Africa dry, and they still refuse to pay a decent price for anything. And they have their foot on Africa, and if a leader dares to ask for fair treatment, he is killed or removed.
Man, that goes into all of these African heads of states that have been removed, as they call it, unalived, because there's a lot of that going on historically.
There's a whole lot, but what we're experiencing right now is a revolution in Africa, because these young Africans is not having it. They say, how can they have so much resources and still be dead broke?
So poor.
Niger. You know, Niger, the country of Niger, has gone through so much. They talk about now 80% of the people don't have electricity, but all the uranium from Niger is used to provide electricity in France. Mm. 25-30% of France's electricity. The Eiffel Tower is lit by African resources from people who don't even have electricity.
Wow.
Don't have electricity. And they using so-called African leaders. They had the audacity to threaten Niger and the people who overthrew the puppet that America put in there.
Mm-hmm.
They had the audacity to threaten these people with military intervention from their neighbor countries, other Africans. They threatened to put other African nations, Nigeria, Ghana, but everybody thinks the new Mecca is still under American control, remote control. Mm. Ghana is willing to send troops into Niger to attack other Africans because they want a fair price for the uranium and gold that France is extracting out of America, is extracting out of Africa. They say, how can they have all this stuff and they're suffering?
So we're talking about beyond imperialism, right?
Yeah, beyond imperialism.
Talking about terrorism. You just spoke in terms of terrorism. That's beyond imperialism.
Oh, yeah.
Blatant
terrorism.
Let me tell you something.
There are 14 countries in Africa now. The former French colonies, they were forced to sign the continuation of colonial pact. Their money has to sit in the French bank. 60% of their reserves must sit in the French bank that the French can use on the stock market. And if they want to do anything, if they want to build anything in their country, they have to borrow their own money from France to do it. And France has the first right of refusal on the company to build. If you want to give your people electricity, they gotta get approval from France. They got 1,500 troops in Niger now. Now they just kicked the French troops out of Mali. this UN thing, and I'm worried about these leaders. Now they just approved, they just made this deal where they're going to give Kenya all this money to send 1,000 troops to Haiti, to police Haiti.
Hmm.
And if you think they're actually fight against the local leaders who are fighting for their country. They're fighting over water in Haiti right now.
Mm.
You know? But we so stupid, so pitiful, want to be liked so bad that we run around the puppet store every day giving them our money when they're the ones that take the drug money that they make selling dope in our community and take that money back to the Dominican Republic and oppress and kill Haitians, other black people, with our money. But we so stupid, we won't read the book. You ask the average black person, I bet you they don't know that Haiti and Dominican Republic is the same piece of land.
Right.
And they've been warring against black people, you know. I tell everybody, it's been a race war from the door, but nobody wants to admit it. But America is fighting for its life because Russia, now, they're trying to make this issue that, you know, it's a power play for Russia trying to gain influence in Africa. Russia ain't never colonized Africa. They had no colonies in Africa. Russia has been nothing but a friend. And black men should be ashamed of themselves that we have to rely on the goodwill and the help of Russia to defend our own continent, that we should be defending ourselves. But we so busy worshiping white people, trying to be everything but an African. You know what I mean? Everything but an African.
Mm. Wow. Shah. I'm going to hold on for a minute. I got another call, all right? Just hold on. Let me ask this. Don't hang up. 8737, welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, Mr. Carlton, how you doing? This is Ibrahim. How are you?
All right, brother. How you doing, Ibrahim? Brother from Africa right here.
Yeah, I was just impressed by this gentleman who you put on hold here. I didn't know that that information was known by most of the Americans, because I just came from Africa about a month ago, and with the situation that he just explained is exactly what's going on in Africa. Africans are in the wake of trying to stand now for themselves. And when I say Africans, I'm talking about the young generation, because there's a generation right now that says enough is enough. We have been under French colonization. We thought we had our independence in 1959, right? That's where most African countries were declared independent. But under that independency, nothing was real. Nothing was actually definite, because he said just now that we signed treaties, that those treaties would said, okay, you guys you can call yourself independent, but we're going to have restrictions that we're going to put in place, that even to build a roadway, you have to ask us our permission. We control every single thing in Senegal. Since I was born in 1967, and I left Senegal to come to the United States in 1993, but until then, I still see under the mean keys of the Senegalese government, there's always a French assistant. They call them technician, whatever they want to call it. Mm-hmm. And all of those people are there to basically monitor the economical activity of the Africans. We've never been there as far as being sovereign. But right now, this is what's going on. The gentleman just talked about those three countries, Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, and I would say four, and Niger. And he explained the situation with Niger. Niger is the country, the number one country probably that produces uranium that actually electrifies the French Republic. The Republic of France is taking daily basis the uranium to go and fulfill their needs in France. In Africa, you still have a people that don't have hospitals. I was in Senegal. Senegal right now, we're in the turmoil. We're in the very tense situation right now where people are actually being oppressed illegally. The rights of people are being violated every day. Now in Senegal, we have an opposition leader who's now sitting in jail simply because the gentleman underlined what's going on as far as the oppression that the Senegalese people are living under. They said,
right.
He said, he basically told them, guys, listen, this is the time to wake up. This is what you need to do. This is what's going on. And everybody kind of like, okay, embrace his ideas and wanted to put him in power. But today he's sitting in jail simply because some false allegations, some lies that was laid on top of him. And that's what the French people do. I'm not going to say the French people. I'm going to say the French government. And right. Because still right now, there's a French officials that's still fighting for the African. But you got to understand, what it is the interest of that Republic. France doesn't have anything. France, beside Africa, is a third world country. But the pressure they put on the African leader right now to keep doing what they're doing so they can still be under their hand in Africa is humongous. Gaddafi was killed simply because Gaddafi made the French economy from Africa completely went south. They couldn't. We pay in communication. We Africans pay billions of dollars to make a phone calls to get satellite. Gaddafi come up and he created what he called Arabsat. He created a satellite system that Africa now gets called for basically free. And he said that the whole thing he wanted it was the United of Africa.
Right.
But his problem was, unfortunately, he has African. He didn't have Africans who were supposed to ally with him in that same idea, and that's why he's where he's at right now. He didn't do nothing wrong. He didn't do nothing wrong. Gaddafi was not a terrorist. I don't think he did anything as far as try to have these African nations sovereign and independent and have his control their own economy.
Right.
The gentleman said it exactly right. We African, we have to take matters on our own hands. It's not. We are people that always rely on the foreign countries, on the Europeans. Senegal right now is sitting in oil, diamond, all types of wealth. But right now we have everything is extracted and exploited by the European, by the French people, actually.
Right.
And that's what we've been. Sekou Touré lived that. Patrice Lumumba lived that. Modibo Keita lived that. Everybody lived through those things. They were all eliminated because they didn't want the French. They were fighting against the French imperialism. And that's what's going on as we speak right now in Africa.
Hmm. That's sad because it's been overdue,
This opposition guy, even you say his name, Ousmane Sonko, you said his name, Ousmane Sonko,
mm-hmm.
You have potentially going to find yourself in jail that night. Just make it known that you are his party got dismissed because he didn't want to respond to court. Under some false allegation, you know, it's just too much that the Africans are doing, are feeling right now under those European nation. We need to find a way to be out of this. This is
right.
Enough is enough. That's what Africans are saying right now, but the
right.
Europeans don't want to hear it. And it's going to be over now. It's going to be over because I think this is right now. The population are very determined, and this is the time that it's going to stop.
Right.
And it will. Thank you for the time, Carlos.
Thank you for calling in, my brother. All right. So y'all heard it from two brothers. And it's time. Right? It's past time, really. Look, listen to some of this stuff. Gaddafi was on the right track. I guess they cut him down. They didn't want nobody to duplicate anything like that. But if Gaddafi could think about that, so can the rest of the African brothers. It's not a rocket science. Your country for your countrymen. That's not, you don't have to be a genius to figure that out. So, you know, things are going to, hopefully things do change in the homeland and in this land also. Because we got a lot of work to do over here, too. I know it's not what this nice topic is about, but it's kind of like, you know, we do. And I'm going to leave us out. We got lots of stuff to do, to think about, other than some of the nonsense that we've been wrapping our heads around, wrapping around other people's heads. We know we have to change. And as you say, unity, seems like these guys are disrupting unity and ruling with fear. And I guess they can't get him out of there. I don't know why they can't get him out, because Gaddafi was able to get the people out with his military change in Libya. So, brothers, you know, you got to go to Russia to get your stuff. You know, hey, guy had a blueprint on what to do. I said, you know, like I'm saying, like, if you have something, you got to be able to protect it. Because if you protected somebody, big shark or big wolf, big fish is going to come and try to take it from you. Shaw, you want to say anything before we hang up? Because I've got like 5 minutes.
I'm just glad to see that people are waking up and that the revolution is happening in Africa. Like the brother said, the youth ain't going for it. So the change is going to come. They've been trying to be free. So every time they try to get free, they were force fed a leader that was on the string. That was a puppet.
Right.
Now, he's the brother from Senegal. The leader in Senegal right now is a piece of crap, because they're actually willing to send troops to fight other Africans
right.
for France's interest. You know what
right.
I mean? And this
right.
this is but we gotta stand up here and build and be self sufficient, because we gotta build and be strong enough so that what happens when this country falls, it falls around us and not on top of us.
Right.
Africa, they doing their part. They getting ready to do their part. You know, France has actually tried to knock off, assassinate the young brothers, the youngest leader in Africa, Traore in Burkina Faso. They tried
right.
to kill. They just tried to have a coup on them yesterday, day for yesterday. So they fighting because they it's over for them. This is
right.
a life or death struggle for them. Like he said. Without feeding off Africa, France is Kensington.
I hear you. They ain't saying much, boy. They in dire straits, man. Okay, well,
but
you know.
As long as another man controls your necessities, you're a slave.
You're a slave, that's right. That's right. Nobody can, you can't self-determine, you're a slave. That's right.
Okay.
We're gonna end our show on that note right there, because slavery is still alive and kicking. Now,
oh, yeah.
make no qualms about it. It's still alive and kicking, and you know, we gotta stand up over here. So I'm talking to the brothers over here. I don't know who's listening, but somebody catch wind of this show, we gotta start standing up. We gotta find a moral compass. If we don't have one, make one. Create one, find one, use somebody that has one, a moral compass, and we need to start moving on forward, because this right here is not working. We can't get away from what we're doing.
Right.
All right,
Change
we got
my choice in a minute.
That's right. All right, so I just want to, again, I want to thank you for calling in. Everybody for calling in today, all my callers and listeners, Blog Talk Radio, We Talk Productions, Mr. Kenneth Jones, who started all this for me. I started as just a person calling the show myself, and here I am, because this is, as you know, Sha, you know, I ain't never dreamed of nothing like this.
Right.
You know who I used to be, you know what I'm saying? So
right. This
right here is something else, even to me. Until next week,
though,
I want to say.
There's hope for everybody.
Yeah.
We live in proof that there's hope for everybody.
That's right. So,
Thank
you, brother. Thanks for calling in, my man, Abraham. Glad you call in. Then call in on more frequently. Until next week, y'all. Each one reach one. Each one teach one. I'm out. Peace, y'all.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live. Thank you.
You only got one screen, too.